Wolf, get away from those sheep.
Bollocks.
You're listening to the Wolf and the Shepherd podcast, broadcasting from Fort Worth in the great state of Texas. Now, get ready for this episode of the Wolf and the Shepherd.
Welcome to this episode of the Wolf and the Shepherd. Today, we have with us Chris Hull. Chris, glad you could join us today.
Excited to be on the show today, Max.
Thanks, Chris. And we are absent the wolf. The wolf got called to his kid's school to pick his kid up because there was some issues. I think it was his kid was a little on the sick side or whatever. Kind of ironic that the wolf couldn't be here because he had to go pick up his kid, especially when we're going to be talking about education, right? And how all this stuff with, you know, modern day education and all this that goes on, and the wolf couldn't be here because he had to go to his kid's school to pick him up, right? I mean, we did not plan this. This is not fake or anything like that. He literally had to leave to go ahead and do that. So just so we're clear there, that, you know, that was not staged by any means. But Chris, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so my name is Chris Hull. I'm the Chief Product Officer and co-founder at Otis. Otis is a place or a platform to where we provide the tools to help educators and families. So the wolf and knowing what's going on with their kid, that's where you can find it out if you're using a system like Otis. We provide the tools to help you teach, grade, analyze, and plan to really help maximize learning for each kid. And a little bit about myself is I was a former teacher, taught for 11 years, and I got four kids, so I can only imagine, again, when one kid gets sick, it seems to go through the entire clan, but it's definitely exciting to be here today and talk to you.
Yeah, I guess the good news for the wolf is he only has the one kid. I also have four kids, so I completely understand where you're coming from, and yeah, when that one kid gets sick, yeah, then the rest of them get sick. So, you know, being a teacher for 11 years and then you delve into this new venture, what was that triggering moment when you said, hey, I've got to jump out here and I've got to try to shake things up a bit and, you know, help some folks out?
No, I always think that, you know, as a teacher, your main goal is to be able to connect to the kid, to be able to understand who the kids are and to be able to help them reach their potential. And reaching their potential requires you to get to know them and requires you to learn who they are, learn where they're currently at and their skills. As a social studies teacher, I focused on three main skills, which were the ability to read, the ability to write, and the ability to think critically and independently. And the idea is if I were to be able to best maximize or create a path forward for that kid, I needed to know what the kid was interested in, what the kid was passionate about, what certain topics might be a way to get them excited to do things like writing or reading, which, you know, sometimes it's hard to compete. You know, reading and writing doesn't always compete with the latest video games or crazes like that. And so when I was a teacher, I was trying to help connect and maximize the learning for each of my 150 kids. And really the turning point for me that brought me from being, you know, a teacher to now being a co-founder and the chief product officer was I looked for a tool or a technology that would allow me to be more efficient. I replaced somebody who she must have been a superhuman. She was able to do all of these things. She was able to collect those old 5-star notebooks that were able to contain all this information. And I'm like, I don't know if I can lift 150 notebooks every weekend back and forth. I have to find a better way of connecting with kids and also observing their writing and thinking. And so I turned to technology to do that. And so we were lucky enough at first to have a device for each kid. So they were able to write a blog or read or do YouTube. But I wanted a place and I was able to help develop Otis, which really provides this comprehensive understanding of where a kid's at. So if a kid's in second grade or seventh grade, whenever they're in a district, we track their progression within the district, allowing teachers to better know who they are, to prescribe what they need next. And it also gives the visibility to families and students to better understand what's happening. I have, you know, as I mentioned, you have four kids, I have four kids. If we were to ask them today after this call, hey, what you learned today? Most of them are going to be like stuff, or I don't know. or
nothing.
Nothing. That's a good one. You know, it's like, well, what is it really? Being able to ask one of those questions, you know, my kids luckily use Otis, so I'm sometimes able to jump in and be like, oh, wow, I saw you read again. My kids are in dual language, which, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, you're studying butterflies. Oh, did you look at any butterflies today? Or what was the, I have girls who are three, like, what's the prettiest butterfly you looked at today? And they might describe it. It gives me a chance to kind of jumpstart the conversation because I kind of have a cheat sheet. I have a cheat sheet to know what's happening. And my hope is that Otis is kind of that cheat sheet for the families, the students, and the educators to be able to jumpstart their real work, which is, again, teaching kids, which is hard enough already. As somebody who was in the classroom for 11 years and my sister is a teacher, it's really something that there's so much appreciation for me goes to the teachers who are doing the day in and day out work to really help our kids.
Yeah, and it's kind of ironic that you brought up the fact that, you know, some of these kids that you were teaching or whatever had access to devices. One of the things that I've always had this problem with is the beginning of the school year, you get the school supply list, you know, and it's, you've got to buy this many notebooks and these colored pencils and these crayons and blah, blah, blah. And by the time you are done with all those school supplies, you could buy them a tablet, you know, maybe not a fantastic iPad, but you could buy them a Chromebook. You could buy them an Amazon tablet or whatever. And we have gotten anywhere now to where I don't even remember the last thing I wrote down. I always type something in my phone or something like that. So could we then turn around and take some kind of technology like what you're talking about, what your company has, and say, look, let's stop buying, you know, the 64 pack of Crayola crayons for each kid and all of that mess, and literally just save some money and give them something that they're going to actually use, not only right now in school, but for the rest of their life.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways, many districts will kind of take the savings that could be had by using Otis. If you implement Otis, you can save money. You know, when we first adopted in my school, we saved on paper. Instead, we didn't have to make copies of all these research things. We could instead, let's read it online. We didn't have to invest in as many supplemental materials in social studies because a lot of the social study materials are free online. They're open education resources. I think there are things where you can, as a district, save money. Crayons and some of those markers, I think one of the things that a lot of districts are finding, there is a fine line. Like, I think you need to give the options, right? Some kids really enjoy and learn via the creation of something that might be easier. Again, I'm looking at my three-year-olds and my five-year-old son. There is a place for drawing and coloring and getting your hands dirty, playing outside and doing things like that. But I think your overall message is very valid, where we can make some shift in resources to be able to provide a more efficient workspace. I do know that the arts and things like that are really important, right? I think instead of mandating, hey, everybody use Crayola crayons this time, instead, we can instead say, like, what would be your medium or your way of doing something? When I was teaching, we would have this project where kids would present for this project. It was called Project Citizen. They would problem solve. And some kids would create a video. Some kids would create like digital artwork. And some kids would instead create these really cool hand-drawn visuals that they would then bring online. They would take this hand-drawn visual and bring it online. So there's so many creative things. And I think instead of mandating, hey, use this, if we can give kind of that open resource option to kids, it can really allow them to explore what's going to make sense to them. But also, it'll help the teachers, what does each kid need? It doesn't always have to be the same, you know, and I think that really can do a lot.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. And I could see how that could be taken, you know, getting rid of the crayons as an attack on the art teacher, right? You know, and that's not what I attended, although I always got good grades in art, but I think the teachers gave me good grades because they were just feeling sorry for me because I couldn't draw very well or something like that. But, you know, we're losing some of that art right? And not necessarily the drawing part, but, you know, my parents always complain that my kids can't write in cursive. You know, we've lost cursive writing all of a sudden. You know, it just kind of disappeared. And you look at things like the Constitution, you being social studies more, let's talk around there, like the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, and you look how that was handwritten, because obviously they didn't have computers back then, but look at it artistically, how beautiful the handwriting was on there. And if I were to write you a note right now, I'm going to guess pretty much you couldn't even read it because my handwriting is so terrible. But I remember my parents telling me, you know, they had handwriting classes and to make sure that you could actually write stuff clear, nice, pretty, or whatever. And it's always baffled me looking back on some of those documents. It's like the same person wrote all this because it all looked almost identical.
Yeah, the pride and the calligraphy and the writing was huge. It was funny you mentioned that. My grandparents and my parents said the same thing to me. I actually have very, very neat small print, and I have this kind of print cursive, like makeshift style. But it's something that there are changes that come, right? And, you know, I think, you know, how many people still do handwritten notes? I like to do them occasionally, but it makes me feel very old school when I do it. I think in part it's about taking what do we want to focus on. And there are things that might be lost. I've read articles to where when you don't do your handwriting, you might lose your fine motor skills. But I also think there is a chance for us to rethink, you know, what are the skills we want our kids to be able to develop? And I think that's a really cool part about a lot of these schools that Otis gets to work with, is that we really allow the schools to be able to determine what are the focuses. You know, there are art programs out there that are going to put a heavy emphasis, you know, they're, you know, heavy emphasis on this ability to create artistically, and it might be digital or it might be in the real world. My cousin is really, my niece, I'm going through an old moment right now, a moment of craziness here. My niece is an amazing artist, but she loves to work with like oil paint. I don't even know how she does it. You know, it's like a lot of these kids, you know, where all of a sudden my cousin, who I was thinking about, he's into photography. So this idea here of like which one's going to fit the medium, I think really it gets into like, what are we trying to teach, right? We're trying to teach this mindset of looking at the world differently, looking at the world creatively. And I think that can really shape how things go. And yeah, we might not be able to write in as gorgeous of handwriting. You know, I used to, you know, where's like the wood shop, you know, where's the, you know, like the, where's like the, you know, the shop class, the wood shop class, where are these classes? In some ways, there might be a return of those. I don't know. I think the coolest part is being able to bring more transparency to education so that these conversations can be had, because really that's a decision to me of the community and of the education, the schools, to be able to provide the courses that are going to make for the best citizens and the best people moving forward.
Yeah. And kind of going back to that fine motor skills, right? You know, we talk about handwriting or, you know, cursive writing, stuff like that. But even with the advent of so much technology that we have right now, typing has now been removed for the most part from schools, right? So you still have this computer in front of you and a keyboard in front of you. But I mean, my daughter, who's now in college, she can't type. Now, she can text with her thumbs much faster than I can text. But if you throw a keyboard in front of her, I can smoke her on the keyboard. You know, if we're going to type a document out, she can't get it done as fast, but she can smoke me as far as the texting, right? And now we're actually looking at the fact that language isn't as important. Grammar isn't important. It's more imparting the message, right? So rather than saying U-Y-O-U, people are putting a U, the letter U, and doing the emoji thing and all of that to convey messages, almost like we're going back to ancient Egypt now and we're using hieroglyphics or something like that. So do you see kind of that language shifting as well because we're getting rid of some of that?
Well, I think really that really, I think communication, this is really, this is a fun conversation in terms of like, this gets into like what I used to study in terms of social studies and culture and society. Language is really built on the ability to communicate and the ability to write. And I'm sure when your daughter is texting her friend, she's going to use different emojis and different language context versus when she's texting or talking with you. And I think one of the things that becomes really important is being able to communicate both within a cohort or group of people, but also outside. And I was shocked too. I remember how much time we spent on keyboarding when I was growing up. And it's like, it saved me hours. The ability to type quickly really is helpful. And it's an efficiency, right? A lot of what I've learned, the skills I've learned are really trying to drive more efficiency so that I can try to accomplish more or do what I want to do when I have the time to do it. And in order to have the time to do what I want to do, I got to make sure I get done what I need to get done. But a lot of this is like, I am shocked that some of the ability to write on a keyboard has been lost. Like that one, I'm less certain to why. Like the handwriting, I get, we've transitioned from writing these hand notes. We want to be able to digitally represent them. You know, we might put things into Google Docs or Microsoft Office. Like, so we have to put things on. But I'm less, I haven't been able to logically connect why has keyboarding, this skill that has become even more prominent in our usage, where, you know, when I grew up, like there would be a computer lab. Well, now with, you know, the pandemic, a lot of schools have now gone to each kid gets a device where they have a Chromebook or they have a tablet or they have some type of device to be online, especially when we had to deliver so much remotely. Why then has this development of a skill been left? And yeah, that's a question I really don't have an answer to, but it's definitely one to ponder because we seem to have sometimes left this skill to the side, and we're really promoting like these thoughts, which are important. Like I want people to be able to read, write, and think. But the question is like, oh, you know, I remember when I first started teaching where I taught it, there was a home ec class, like, and it was like, oh, I remember it was amazing. I was right next to it. They had some amazing food. And I remember kids would come back saying like, thank you so much for being able to teach me how to do X, Y, and Z to cook. You know, they would cook like hamburger, like they would make hamburger. It was like, well, who's going to teach that all the time, right? It's like one of those things. What is the school there to teach? I think it's a really interesting question to ask.
Yeah. And kind of going back to your wood shop comment, right? I remember my dad was very frustrated with my high school because they didn't have auto shop. Because when my dad went to high school, he took auto shop and they taught kids how to, and of course, this is super old school, right? But how to clean a carburetor, how to adjust a carburetor, how to put points in and adjust that, how to do a brake job. Now we just say, oh, well, we take it down to the local auto shop and get that done. I mean, that's what you do. You don't actually do that work yourself. And we've created these cottage industries basically to take care of all that work. And it's kind of the same along the lines of, you know, typing out a document, something like that. It's kind of that same mental thought that, well, why do we want to teach something antiquated? And the ironic part about typing, I guess, is it's never really changed. I mean, we're using the same keyboard that was created on typewriters from years ago. And in fact, I just read something, I guess it was the other day, about how now we're getting rid of the double space after the period of a sentence, because we no longer needed to do that anymore. That was a typewriter thing. And now you only have to do a single space after a sentence typing. And I thought, well, how am I going to explain that to my kids? Because that's how I was taught. I was actually taught to type on a typewriter. I'm not that old. I'm kind of an old man, but I'm not that old. But that's the way I was always taught. And so, like you're saying, that evolution of education, so to speak.
Yeah. And I think it's trying to always reinvent, right? There is this thing like, why are we doing this? And if it's because it's how we've always done it, that's not always the best reason. But we want to be sure that we're creating, you know, I'd say citizens or people, but we want to create people who are really able to thrive and succeed in their life. And that's where I really think schools need to sometimes take a step back and say, what is it? You know, one of the things, my wife is a former teacher. She taught for several years before, but she has the toughest job in the world, which is, you know, being a mother, a stay-at-home mom. I'll leave it there. She just has such a tough job with four kids. But one of the things that's really amazing is we talk about, like, man, where is this like basic accounting class of just like, if you leave high school, like, how do you manage, like, what is a mortgage? How does it work? You know, how do you pay credit cards? Like, what is this interest rate? Wait, I'm given this free piece of plastic. I can all of a sudden do X, Y, Z. Like, should we now be teaching cryptocurrency and stuff like this? Like, that type of thing becomes really, you know, something I wonder about, like, what are these courses that we should be teaching to ensure that when you leave high school, that you're prepared, you know, for the world ahead of you. And, you know, I think we've identified a lot of key skills. Like, I think it's important, as I harp on, I feel like I'm a broken record, but if we can read, write, and think critically and independently, great, that's one thing. But what are the other things that are going to allow you to go out there? Is it the ability to change the oil in your car? Is it the ability to do a home project where you can change out a light fixture and understand how the electrical wires work? You know, that's something you kind of might do in like a science class where you understand where wiring works. Is that something we should look into more? What about plumbing? If you had to change, like, you know, something with your toilet or with some of the faucets, like, what about accounting? What about being able to create a budget? You know, what about being able to track like the money in, money out, and how do you plan on saving? All that stuff, it's like, where does that fit in? And I think those are questions that I think we I know some districts and some communities talk a lot about, but I think they're really really fascinating topics to kind of dive into and consider.
So let's talk about this twofold, and I'm going to start with districts or schools or however you want to point at that are not using OTIS, right? So what would be your call to them, that call to action to say, here's why you need to use this product?
Yeah, I think the call to action really comes into a place where educators and the stakeholders involved have a lot on their plates. They have so much going on. There needs to be a single platform where we can drive efficiency so that they can focus on the teaching and learning, and we can see if these initiatives and these ideas are working. Are we able to actually see the growth of groups and students to see if they're happening? And I think that's really the power of OTIS, is that we provide a place to drive this efficiency, but also the transparency to see if these initiatives are working for you. So maybe there is a district where it's like, oh man, we should add a class around the ability to do an oil change or accounting or any of the ideas we've mentioned. Well, what are the outcomes from that? What is the success of that? And that's what really OTIS allows you to do. It's like we're kind of like a CRM or a medical profile that kind of tracks you over time. So you can articulate this information from one teacher to the next, from one colleague to the other. And really, we provide this insight into what's happening.
Yeah. And it's kind of interesting you bring up CRM, because that's actually where my next question was going to go to. You've got like old school sales guys, and they don't want to use a CRM. They say, well, it's too complicated. It takes me too long to input my stuff into this CRM. And I've got my little, like you say, the 5-star notebook, right? And it's laying in the passenger seat and they're making their notes all day. How is OTIS not one of those time-consuming applications that's going to take more time for people to input the data in and actually save them time versus that old, you know, 5-star notebook?
Yeah, I think that question becomes really important to consider, right? Now, in part, there is some entry, right? Like if you're going from, again, using our example of the sales guy with the 5-star notebook on, you know, his front seat, in part, we want to use the CRM to be able to allow for greater collaboration between maybe a salesperson and the account manager. You want to be able to have that dialogue about a client so that everything isn't anecdotal. Like, oh, I talked to Johnny on the phone. This is what happened. Let's put that so we can interact with it more so that different departments can use that information in different ways. OTIS is similar. If you unlock something as the PE teacher or as a social studies teacher, you've unlocked something about a kid. Man, if I talk, you know, Johnny's struggling with math, but he loves basketball. He was really trying to struggle with how percentages work. But when we talked about, you know, Steph Curry being able to hit a 3-pointer at a 40% clip, what does that mean? Oh, he gets that. Every 10 shots he's going to make 4, that kind of click. Understanding that you have that insight to a kid, you'd want to spread that knowledge so that when again, if the PE teacher, the social studies teacher found that, well, we'd want to let the math teacher know. We'd want to let the English teacher know. We'd want to let the next year's teachers know, hey, this is a great way that allows him to process this information or to think. So there is some entry, but what we really do to combat the question so that it's not over entry or overwork is we try to make so that the tasks that you are doing capture the information for you. So for example, if I'm giving a test in Otis, I'm able to have Otis grade it. So then all of a sudden, instead of me scoring it myself, it's going to auto grade it. It's going to auto assign it to each kid. It's going to auto calculate the scores for each kid. Well, that's saving me time. And now when the kid goes from year to year, though, that performance is staying with the kid. So we try to take the tasks that are already being asked of educators, put them in Otis so that you're doing them there, and then collect the information. And we try to minimize the amount of work that has to be manually entered. There is some, but we try to minimize it. And the work that has to be manually entered is really geared towards, it's going to be for the betterment of the whole for the kid. So when he articulates from year to year, but also for the collaboration between educators so that you're doing it for the team, so to speak. You know, maybe one sales guy, oh, I could do really well. But if we all of a sudden need that sales guy to pass it off to, you know, the invoicing or pass it off to the account manager or pass it on to onboarding, well, how is he going to get that information to him, right? In order for that to be successful, he has to enter something. So if we can streamline that process, we think we can really drive some really cool efficiencies.
Yeah, and so kind of what you're talking about is, let's say, outside of just classroom teaching, right? A teacher is spending 4 hours a day doing all these tasks. If you can turn around and say, well, now you're going to spend an hour a day in Otis, and now you're going to save 3 hours because Otis is going to automate some of this stuff for you. We're going to save you work. You're just going to do a different set of work. So it seems like you're doing more work, but we're taking all this other work off of you. And so you're actually saving time, which lets you have that extra 3 hours. And I know I'm just making up numbers right now.
This is exactly it. You nailed it. This is exactly what it is, right? If you're able to front load a little bit of that work or take some of that work, well, instead of having to email home every single parent about how their kid's doing, the parents can see. Instead of having to print out the test and send it home, well, now it's in Otis. So we're trying to find the areas that you're already doing the work. You're going to put the time in there, but it's going to save you countless hours throughout the year after this. There is a little bit of this initial load, initial start, but once you get there, it's, you know, one of the things that happened for me is I used Otis in my classroom for 5 years before I left the classroom. Well, at some point I would build a project, I'd build a unit. Then the next year it was already done. And I just had to tweak things. It was already like 95% there. I just had to tweak X, Y, and Z, maybe update a couple things, maybe like make it better, maybe make refinements. But I was 90% there. It wasn't like I had to reinvent the wheel. And that's really where we can do so much to help drive this time savings. And the time savings just continue to reap rewards. It's almost like compounding interest to bring it to that. It's just a really cool ability for us to be able to help educators and families and students.
Well, and kind of using your analogy about compounding interest, right? I've always been a fan of do a lot of hard work up front to save you a lot of work later on. Where, and ironically, at the same time, I'm a huge procrastinator, right? So I hate to do work and I'll just put it off. But I can also understand the fact that, hey, if I just do a little bit more work right now, I can save myself a lot of work later on. And I think that's kind of what Otis is projecting, right? Like, do a little bit more work up front and save yourself a lot of time in the back end, so to speak.
Exactly. Yep. You said it better than me. That's exactly right.
So one thing that I'm kind of gaining, you know, a little bit more understanding of this is, for lack of a better term, right, you're creating a profile for these kids that then the kindergarten teacher, let's say, that profile is kind of set up. And then this profile follows this kid throughout their educational career, where perhaps a teacher the parent or whatever can then kind of look back on the progress, have some of this stuff set up to understand. Like you said, Johnny understands 4 out of 10 from the basketball court is 40%. And so that teacher can kind of gear that. So fast forward to 7th, 8th grade, when they're looking at more upper mathematics, let's say, they can go back on their so-called profile, correct?
Yeah, there's the ability to look at the historical growth, right? Like maybe we identify, you know, when they're in a biology or a chemistry class, wow, this student struggled with this type of skill. And we really try to link a lot of these things to skills, or they're called in education standards. And it allows for this type of insight to be had where it's like, whoa, you know, this has always been a struggle for Johnny. Or maybe the struggle's brand new. Whoa, he was dominating math. Like, what is it? Maybe it's not math related. You know, that was a big thing in 7th, 8th grade. There was so much flying around that it wasn't always the academics that were causing a concern, right? Maybe they just didn't make their travel soccer team, or maybe something happened in their family or socially or emotionally, whatever it was. It's like, you can look at the pattern or the history. Oh, well, he's always been great at math. What's happening now? Is it something going on? Or maybe it's like, whoa, we're really struggling. Let's use this percentage. Well, percentage has always been difficult for him. Now we're doing the application of it again in a more complex way. I can see that coming into play. I need to refortify this skill so that he's able to do the next level. And those are the type of conversations we hope we can help provide the information to actually have. Because in the past, before Otis, it was often, you didn't know what happened. If I was a 7th grade teacher, what happened in the 3rd, 4th grade classroom? I might not know. I might not have contact with that 3rd, 4th grade teacher. How did that go? And trying to provide like, oh, wow. One of the assessments that, you know, we can say is like, there's this assessment called NWEA, which is like a reading assessment. Well, this was his score in 2nd grade. And now this is his score in 7th grade. And I've been able to track that progress the entire way. It really can lead to some really good insights. But again, kind of to what we talked about before, jump starts to what you're trying to figure out, where I'm not uncovering that ideally. You know, ideally, I'm not uncovering that in December, January, February. I'm knowing that going into August and September when I'm connecting with the kids.
Yeah. So kind of going along the lines, and of course, this is data, right? And it's ones and zeros, but you're also, you have the capability within the program to add kind of some of those social issues. You know, Johnny's parents got a divorce when he was in 4th grade or something like that. Am I off base or am I on track, that you can kind of load some kind of notes, so to speak, about the kid, so teachers can look at that and say, hey, I can kind of get that.
Yeah. So we have a couple ways to do that in the platform, not to get too far into the weeds, right? We integrate with things like Google Docs and Teams, or you could upload attachments if you want to upload things like that. If there were things that were not digitized that you now want to be there. We also have a really cool feature called Plans, which allows you to monitor this progress over time. Like you can be on a graduation pathway starting in 6th grade. Here you go. And it allows you to track that over time. So yeah, this is definitely feasible and possible. And it's an exciting piece that I really think we offer to the market, which really can be a differentiator for us, which is one of the things that, you know, not to get too salesy here, it's something that I'm really proud that we're able to do. But what really is energizing and motivating to me is when I'm able to talk to the educators who are using it to see that it is helping them do what's most important to me, which is helping maximize learning, right? It's all about the learning, being able to unlock that. I still wish I had that teacher hat on sometimes. You know, I left in 2018, but it's been one of those things where we want to be that tool, that platform to help describe what you articulated well.
Right. So, of course, I can't really picture educators, teachers, school districts, whatever, saying this is a bad idea, right? But sometimes you got to sell this to the parents. How do the parents benefit more so from all this information? Because they're going to say, oh, okay, so maybe our taxes might go up and maybe this is worth it or whatever. And we want to support the teachers. We want to do this. But at the end of the day, we always kind of look at number one, which is us. So as a parent, why would a parent want to support this program?
Yeah, so just to reference back, you had mentioned like there is a way for Otis to kind of consolidate some of the spending on other tools so that it is not a huge cost increase. But the biggest drive for families is it provides you more insight into what's happening. Instead of waiting to the parent-teacher conference and getting a surprise to what's happening, or instead of waiting for a report card and reading the three-sentence comment, you're able to actually see the progress as it's happening. You're able to see what is going on, and you're able to more quickly communicate with the teachers. Like, we have this ability for you to email the teachers right from the platform. Now, it's not a huge tool, but it's like, it's so much easier that if I'm in the grade book looking at something, I want to email right there. I don't want to have to go to a different place. I'm here. I click on the email that I need to send. I send it. And so really the big drive for families is, instead of hearing that your kid learned nothing at the dinner table, you're actually able to see a little bit more into their day, and you're able to ask questions, or you're able to look at the skills. Like, we do a lot of work with standards-based grading. So you would see, is your kid able to apply, you know, the ability to multiply fractions? Oh, yes or no. You can see it. You can see all the times. Wow, he's been measured on this skill 12 times. Oh, it's not just once. Like, all of that stuff is presented. And the goal of Otis is to present it as somebody who was an educator and who is a father. You know, we want to present it in a way that's really easy to consume. I think that's our overarching goal. And it's something that I'm never quite happy with how easy to use Otis is. I think that's like something we're continually striving for. I think we're really easy to use, but we can always be easier. And we got to be driving that to the brink, to the extent that we can. And that's the big drive, is giving that insight to families so that they have a better understanding of how their kid's doing.
Right. And of course, in the world we live in, the technology, it's got to be easy, right? Everybody has this short attention span now. It's, you know, give me a 15-second video, give me a soundbite, give me this. I mean, podcasting, of course, is kind of getting it to where people are focusing on things they're actually interested in and will be willing to listen to more. But everything's got to be easy and everything's got to be simple. And yeah, download an app and this app's going to do it for me. And yeah, if I've got to switch from this app to that app to send a message, yeah, it's going to suck for me because I'm too lazy to switch the app. So no, I'm not going to do that. So I get that. Give me a couple of, or, you know, at least one. I know you probably have one kind of success story in the back of your head, but give me kind of an idea of some implementation of Otis that went into a school district or a teacher or a certain situation that, you know, you're just kind of proud of, that you say, you know, hey, this is the story I want to tell at dinner because, you know, this is where Otis kind of knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, man, that's a tough one. So many fun stories come to mind. One of the ones that I got a little, it was kind of interesting or kind of embarrassing, but I think it's a pretty funny anecdote. So trying to give your listeners something that's a little bit funny is I was visiting my in-laws, my wife's family, and they live up in Michigan. And Otis has quite a few districts up there. And one of the districts, we were actually in the community. My mother-in-law lives in an area that Otis families are all around her. And I'm kind of used to that because my kids go to a school that use Otis. My neighbors do, but I also taught in the district. So I kind of know a lot of the families. But I was with my in-laws, and they're up in the Traverse area of Michigan. And we're actually on the water on a boat. And my mother-in-law, we were on like this little sandbar, and my kids were swimming. And all of a sudden this family was right there and they had young kids. And she, oh my goodness, how are you doing? You know, like, great kids. And we found out that she was a teacher in the district. And I like kind of turned away. I'm like, I'm on vacation. How do I really want to know from this woman who's super kind, super polite, but I'm like, do I want to have this engagement around Otis? Because sometimes Otis is trying to provide insights that, you know, the administrators want. Teachers might be like, oh, wait, it's like, again, going to our CRM, like if I'm the sales guy and I have to enter stuff in, even if it's 10 minutes more, there might be a little bit of like, yeah, it's something the district makes me use. And I was kind of like, how is this going to go? Because it's like a very big unknown and I'm enjoying the time. And she proceeds to just, and this was the summer during the pandemic. So we're outside, but we're like after this remote learning, this extremely difficult part of the year. And she just shared that she was so thankful. She didn't know who I worked for. We had no Otis gear. Again, it was just one of those things. And she was just like, she was like, Otis really helped me survive the year. And I felt like I was able to connect to the kids to the best of my ability. And it really helped with the pandemic. They were able to facilitate learning in the pandemic. It was just kind of crazy. I kind of turned my head. And then later it was kind of like, see, and it was this great moment because the smile on the teacher's face really was impactful, where it was this ability to really see that we are making the difference. I hope, you know, we're in another district with, you know, this is a bigger one. I was talking to an administrator and they were really uncertain if they'd spent 2 years implementing this standards-based grading model into their district, professional development and all of these things. And they'd faced some pain points. And after 2 years of work, they had used Otis. And what ended up coming out of it was they were thankful because they could see the progress finally. They felt like the years before, they're like, are we making progress? We think so. We have anecdotes. They were able to see by the number of teachers using it, by the number of standards we had been able to be measured, and from the family input back that they finally understood this initiative that had been 2 years in the making. Those were two kind of examples. One super high level, one that was a teacher. It's just really cool to be able to make that impact on the lives of people that I think around something education that I think so valuable. I think there's education so valuable and so important that I really want to be able to help where I can.
So now I don't want this to seem like such a softball, but it's really going to seem like a softball. So much remote learning, you know, we got the pandemic going on, lots of remote learning or whatever. And we've talked about, you know, the parent teacher conference or the 2 to 3 sentences on the report card. Couldn't you make the argument that a program, an application, something like Otis is much more important now with all the remote learning versus even before when we had so much in-person learning?
Yeah, I think that one of the big, I don't ever want, the pandemic's been a horrible situation for many people. People have been impacted in horrible ways and, you know, lives lost. So I don't want to make like, one of the things I think it has done is it's really made education focus on how can we deliver instruction in a variety of ways. If we're in person, if we're hybrid, if we're any of these, you know, in Illinois, you know, I live in the Chicagoland area, we used to have snow days. How can we handle that? And Otis really allows you to deliver the instruction, measure learning, the ability to grade, analyze all this, and plan progress monitoring anywhere. We've had people switch from in-person to remote, and they still are using the same platform. They can be remote and hybrid using the same platform. And because of that consistency, while the other things are changing, we can provide at least a common thread, and a common thread that can be used when we're remote. Otis is used to a much higher degree during the day. You know, we were seeing kids in Otis for 3-4 hours at a stretch. When they go back to in person, that might go down to like an hour or two. You might have, hey, let's read something, let's watch something now, let's talk about it. Right? You don't have to, like, we don't need to be in Zooms all day. I know we're in a Zoom right now, but the idea is like, we can really adapt, and to be able to adapt allows us to have the flexibility to do what's best. So,
yeah, I guess one thing that kids now might be against Otis is they're going to lose their snow days. I mean, my kids were so upset with the whole Zoom learning. It's like, well, and in, of course, in Texas, snow days are very rare. But if there's a snowflake that hits the street, we have a snow day and nobody goes to school. And I know it's got to be much different, you know, up north. But, you know, you got to admit, though, kids are probably going to say, well, if Otis gets rid of our snow days, of course, remote learning did it. And it's not like it's Otis's fault, right, that snow days are going away. But, you know, I remember being a kid and you'd wake up and there was snow on the ground and you went in and you looked at the news and you waited for the ticker along the bottom to say your school district was closed. I don't think my kids will ever get to see that anymore because now the teachers can teach from home and the kids can learn from home. So, I mean, the snow day's gone, isn't it? I mean, the snow day is dead.
Well, that's funny you mention it. There was a district up in New York somewhere in upstate New York, where he, I think the school, I think I read this, where I think they're going to say the first snow day, they're going to actually keep as a snow day. But then after that, they'll go to remote learning, just because the superintendent was saying that he doesn't want to miss out on that fun. That, you know, I remember my students would sometimes do a snow dance, like, no school, please. And it's like, you want some of that. Like, I don't think we want to miss dozens of days, but like occasionally it's nice to be able to be given a day, go out and play, you know, make some snow forts and such, go sledding. So I think it's, you know, I think, again, I think letting districts make the choices where maybe there is a, you know, a fun snow day, but maybe if it's, you know, there was something called Snowmageddon in Chicago where there was this huge snowstorm that lasted like 4 days here. Maybe we can have one day and then 3 days we return. But again, giving the ability and the power and the responsibility to the districts to decide, again, that's kind of the goal is, you know, like that's why they're the leaders of the district. And we just want to be able to be the tool that allows them to enact their vision for their district and their kids.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I look back on those snow days, and back in February here in Texas, we had what we called Snowmageddon, and the whole state almost shut down because we had like the worst snowstorm up here in DFW than we've had in I don't know how long. And part of it, honestly, my kids had to still do schoolwork because it was in the middle of the pandemic and we had the ability to do the Zoom learning and all that good stuff. But, you know, I also remember getting upset when I was a kid because you had the makeup days that you would have had off, but then you took that snow day, so now you have to go to school. So it kind of goes back to the, you know, you work now and maybe you get some time off later, but then once you have that snow day, now you actually have to go back to school and stick with school a little bit longer. So totally makes sense. So what's the future now of Otis? You were talking about you're constantly trying to make it more user-friendly and all that stuff. What's coming up in the horizon for the Otis platform, you know, that you might be able to maybe share a little bit of, you know, what's going on? And I don't want you to get into any secrets or anything like that, but can you give us a teaser about, you know, some stuff y'all are working on?
Yeah, definitely. So some of the stuff we're working on is creating even some better visualizations of the data that we're collecting so that you're able to look at the aggregate information, like dashboards, like improved visuals of data is definitely something we're working on. But then we're also looking at some refinements for the workflow of like grading, making grading easier, making assessments easier, making things very robust. And so we really listen to our users. Our users are a huge point. About 40% of the Otis team are former educators, and we want to impart the fact that we need to listen to them. So a lot of our features are around taking the features we have and further refining them so that they're easy to do. We've really done a lot of work in terms of the ease of use of that. Some of the new features we have is we added this really cool progress monitoring plans that just came out this summer, and we're adding the ability for families and students to be able to see more into it, to be able to give them more access and to be able to provide them more analytics and information about it. But really about the ease of use and data visualizations are kind of the big buckets we're focused on right now. And again, continuing to listen to our districts to see what else we need to improve.
So let's say an educator / teacher / superintendent, right, wants to kind of dig into this and maybe implement that. What's their first step?
Yeah, the first step to implementation is really to find one of the educational leaders in the district and have them reach out at otus.com, that's otus.com, and schedule a demo. We really will work with you. We really have an amazing client success team, and they'll be able to share, you know, what we're able to help, you know, what pain points we're able to solve. Are you trying to make standards-based grading easier? Are you trying to bring more efficiency into the process around teaching and grading and analyzing? Or are we trying to provide more visibility to families? So once there's an educator interested, you know, typically a leader in the district, they can reach out at otus.com, schedule a time to talk, and we can kind of share the options we provide. And it's a really exciting conversation. And we really want to be solving the problems that the districts are facing.
Yeah. So would you say then, and based off of, you know, kind of how you've described this, I don't want to go so far as to say it's customizable, but you're going to kind of approach each district, so to speak, helping solve their problems. And maybe the software itself will solve all the problems, but you can actually kind of dart focus for certain districts and say, hey, you know, we have this issue, and you can explain how Otis can solve that for them.
Yeah, and I think it's really important that we really look at ourselves like we're the tool that's going to be used for the toolkit of the district. So we want to know, what are your pain points? And our system is very, I like to use the word flexible versus customizable, right? We're a very flexible system to meet the needs that you need to achieve. And this allows you to ensure that there is a path forward, right? You might be laser focused in one area, but you're going to expand the use out. And we want to drive that with you. We want to be able to build out a plan of both implementation and onboarding, but also one that allows it to grow with you and to expand the use of what we provide so that we can provide more and more value over time.
So you mentioned like the educator portion, right? And to get a hold of you on otis.com and take a look at that. But let's flip this around to the parent side, right? So what if a parent is looking at this and saying, hey, this might be something I'd be interested in. What should a parent do as far as trying to bring up that kind of realization that, you know, putting this in front of a school district, or on the other side, not to ask a compound question, but can a parent kind of look at a demo, so to speak?
Yeah, so families can look at demos, but really because the district has to implement it, right? If like a family tried to implement it without the teachers on board, we're not going to be able to drive that insight. We really do need it to come from the district to be the most successful implementation, because we really take that student teacher relationship, and that's what we kind of share. So just having a family and a student on it wouldn't quite provide the view that we need to happen. So it really comes from the district and as to who we kind of target and talk to. But families can talk about the pain points and the communication and the things that they need and mention Otis. I think a lot of districts are very attuned to it. So please share with your district, you know, if you're listening, how we could be a potential solution for you. But it really does need to come from the district in terms of the best process for sale and success.
Yeah. Okay. So I totally understand what you're saying, and I probably asked that question wrong. So let me try again. So let's take like a PTA, right? So now you've got these parents that say, hey, we've looked at this program. And the parents say, hey, we want to implement this into the district. So we're going from more, I guess, grassroots, right? So what could the parents do to push that to the educators, to the district, to get them to implement?
Yeah, the best way in that situation is, you know, parents can definitely go to otis.com and learn more about what we do. And they can share our website with the district administrators and the district educators, and really share that they should set up a time. And I really feel like one, we find great success getting one chance to speak with educators. We can really listen to the pain points and show how Otis can help it. So it's really just about families and students can really make educators aware of Otis and have them visit otis.com and schedule a demo. I think that's really the best path forward to really ensure we have the right stakeholders at the table when we're investigating this.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. So I know we mentioned the website now, I think 11 times, I lost count, but nothing wrong with that. Can you go ahead and kind of give like an overview and say, you know, I want to learn more about this. I'm a parent, I'm a teacher, I'm a superintendent, I'm an educator, all that good stuff. How they can find out more about this, obviously otis.com, but I'm sure you probably have a few other resources or whatever. Maybe I shouldn't have said, I'm sure, but is there any other things that they can, you know, reach out to you, social media, things like that, to learn more about the product?
Yeah, definitely. So you already mentioned otis.com. That's where we have our spotlights, our initiatives. We also have a Twitter account at otisk12. We also are on Facebook. We have a great community where you can kind of learn more about what's happening there. We're also on LinkedIn. all of this is Otis. And really, it's a way for us to be able to drive community. And again, if people wanted to reach out to me, it's Otis Hull, which is my Twitter handle, or on LinkedIn. I love to talk. I love to learn. I love to continually be connected to figure out what we need to do to be able to help everybody involved in education, because the education landscape is changing so rapidly. We want to be continually listening and learning and pushing ourselves forward.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. I mean, that's part of what education is, right? And just continuously learning. You know, that's one of the reasons why we have the podcast, honestly, is to learn more about stuff. So, Chris, certainly appreciate all the time that you took today to talk to us about this product. Everybody, please check that out. We'll have the links and everything in the comments, all that good stuff. So, Chris, thank you so much for joining us. And that will do it for this episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd. Hopefully, the wolf's kid is okay, and we will catch you on the next one.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Wolf and the Shepherd podcast. If you like what you just heard, we hope you'll pass along our web address, thewolfandtheshepherd.com, to your friends and colleagues. And please leave us a positive review on iTunes when you get a chance. Check us out on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for additional content. Join us next time for another episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd.